how long to draw the rest of the smelting and break down the kilns? Batso demanded. 2 days, O Lord, answered the iron worker, bobbing respectfully. His eyes were bloodshot from the smoke of the furnace, and the smoke seemed to have stained his cap of white woolly hair to dingy yellow. You have until dawn. Lord! Work all night but screen the fires from the plain. Batso turned from him and strode up the steep incline to where 20 other men waited below the granite cap of the hill. Like Batso, they wore only simple leather kilts and were unarmed, but their bodies were tempered and fined down by war and the training for war. And there was the warrior's arrogance in their stance as they rose to acknowledge their Induna, and their eyes were bright and fierce. There was no doubt that these were Matabili, not Amaholi dogs. Follow, ordered Batso, and led them at a trot along the lower contour of the hill. There was a narrow cave in the base of the cliff, and Batso drew aside the hanging creepers that screened the mouth and stooped into the gloomy interior. The cave was only 10 paces deep, and it ended abruptly in a scree of loose boulders. Batso gestured, and two of his men went up to the end wall of the cave and rolled aside the boulders. In the recess beyond, there was the glint of polished metal like the scales of a slumbering reptile. As Batso moved out of the entrance, the slanting rays of the setting sun struck deeply into the cave, lighting the secret arsenal. The assegais were stacked in bundles of 10 and bound together with rawhide thongs. The two warriors lifted out a bundle, broke the thongs, and swiftly passed the weapons down the line of men until each was armed. Batso hefted the stabbing spear. The shaft was of polished red heartwood of Makuzi, the bloodwood tree. The blade was hand-forged, wide as Batso's palm and long as his forearm. He could have shaved the hair from the back of his hand with the honed edge. He had felt naked until that moment, but now, with the familiar weight and balance in his hand, he was a man again. He gestured to his men to roll the boulders back into place, covering the cache of bright new blades, and then he led them back along the path. On the shoulder of the hill, Tanasi waited for him on the edge of the rock, which commanded a wide view across the grassy plains, and beyond them the blue forests dreamed softly in the evening light. There, she pointed, and Batso saw them instantly. Two horses, moving at an easy canter. They had reached the foot of the hills and were riding along them, scouting for an easy route. The riders peered up at the tangle of boulders and at the smooth, pearly sheets of granite which offered no foothold. There were only two access trails to the valley of the ironsmiths, each of them narrow and steep, with necks which could be easily defended. Batso turned and looked back. The smoke from the kilns was dissipating. There were only a few pale ribbons twisting along the grey granite cliffs. By morning there would be nothing to lead a curious traveller to the secret place. But there was still an hour of daylight, less perhaps, for the night comes with startling rapidity in Africa above the Limpopo River. I must delay them until dark, Batso said. I must turn them before they find the path. If they will not be turned? Tanasi asked softly, and in reply, Batso merely altered his grip on the broad assegai in his right hand, and then quickly drew Tanasi back off the rocky ledge, for the horsemen had halted, and one of them, the taller and broader man, was carefully sweeping the hillside with a pair of binoculars. Where is my son? Batso asked. At the cave, Tanasi replied. You know what to do if... He did not have to go on, and Tanasi nodded. I know, she said softly, and Batso turned from her and went bounding down the steep pathway with 20 armed Amadoda at his back. At the narrow place which Batso had marked, he stopped. He did not have to speak, but at a single gesture of his free hand, his men slipped off the narrow trail and disappeared into the crevices and cracks of the gigantic boulders that stood tall on either hand. In seconds there was no sign of them, and Batso broke off a branch from one of the dwarf trees that grew in a rocky pocket, and he ran back, sweeping the trail of all sign that might alert a wary man to the ambush. Then he placed his assegai on a shoulder-high ledge beside the path and covered it with the green branch. It was within easy reach if he were forced to guide the white riders up the trail. "I will try to turn them, but if I cannot, wait until they reach this place," he called to the hidden warriors. "Then do it swiftly." His men were spread out for 200 paces along both sides of the trail, but they were concentrated here at the bend. A good ambush must have depth to it, so if a victim breaks through the first rank of attackers, there will be others waiting for him beyond. This was a good ambush. In bad ground, on a steep, narrow trail, where a horse could not turn readily nor go ahead at full gallop. Butso nodded to himself with satisfaction. Then, unarmed and shieldless, he went springing down the trail towards the plain, agile as a clipspringer over the rough track.
"It'll be dark in half an hour," Harry Mellow called after Ralph. "We should find a place to camp." "There must be a path." Ralph rode with one fist on his hip, and the felt hat pushed back on his head, looking up the wild cliff. "What do you expect to find up there?" "I don't know, and that's the devil of it." Ralph grinned over his shoulder. He was unprepared and twisted off balance, so when his horse shied violently under him, he almost lost a stirrup and had to grab at the pommel of the saddle to prevent himself going over. But at the same time he yelled to Harry, "Cover me!" And with his free hand, Ralph tugged the Winchester rifle from its leather boot under his knee. His horse was rearing and skittering in a tight circle, so he could not get the rifle up. He knew that he was blocking Harry's line of fire, and that for those long seconds he was completely defenceless. And he swore helplessly, anticipating a rush of dark spearmen out of the broken rock and scrub at the foot of the cliff. Then he realized there was only one man, and that he was unarmed. And again he yelled at Harry, with even more urgency, for he had heard the clash of the breech block behind him as the American loaded and cocked. "Hold it, hold it, don't shoot!" The gelding reared again, but this time Ralph jerked it down and then stared at the tall black man who had stepped so silently and unexpectedly out of the crevice of a fractured granite block. "Who are you?" he demanded, his voice rasping with the shock, which still screwed his guts into a ball and charged his veins with a rush of quick blood. "Damn you, I nearly shot you!" Ralph caught himself, and this time repeated in fluent Sindabele, the Matabele language, "Who are you?" The tall man in the plain leather cloak inclined his head slightly, but his body remained absolutely still, the empty hands hanging at his side. "What manner of question is that?" he asked gravely. "For one brother to ask another?" Ralph stared at him. Taking in the Induna's headring on his brow, and the gaunt features, scored and riven by the crags and deep lines of some terrible suffering, a sorrow or an illness that must have transported this man to the frontiers of hell itself. It moved Ralph deeply to look upon that riven face. For there was something, the fierce dark eyes and the tone of the deep measured voice, that was so familiar, and yet so altered as to be unrecognizable. "Henshaw," the man spoke again, using Ralph Ballantyne's Matabele praise name. "Henshaw the Hawk, do you not know me? Have these few short years changed us so?" Ralph shook his head in disbelief, and his voice was full of wonder. "Butso, it is not you, surely it is not you. Do you not after all die with your impi at Shangani?" Ralph kicked both feet out of the stirrups and jumped to the ground. "Butso, it is you." He ran to embrace the Matabele. "My brother, my black brother," he said. And there was the lift and lilt of pure joy in his voice. Butso accepted the embrace quietly, his hands still hanging at his sides. And at last Ralph stood back and held him at arm's length. "At Shangani, after the guns were still, I left the wagons and walked out across the open pan. Your men were there, the moles that burrow under a mountain." That was the name that King Lobengula himself had given to Butso's impi. "Izim vukuzani ezembintaba. I knew them by their red shields, by the plumes of the marabou stalk, and the headbands of fur from the burrowing mole. These were the regimentals bestowed upon the impi by the old king, and Batso's eyes turned luminous with the agony of memory as Ralph went on. Your men were there, Batso, lying upon each other like the fallen leaves of the forest. I searched for you, rolling the dead men onto their backs to see their faces, but there were so many of them. So many, Batso agreed, and only his eyes betrayed his emotion. And there was so little time to look for you, Ralph explained quietly. I could only search slowly with care, for some of your men were fanisi fili. It was an old Zulu trick to sham dead on the battlefield and wait for the enemy to come out to loot and count the kill. I did not want an assegai between my shoulder blades. Then the laager broke up and the wagons rolled on towards the king's kraal. I had to leave. I was there, Batso told him, and drew aside the leather cloak. Ralph stared at the dreadful scars and then dropped his gaze while Batso covered his torso again. I was lying amongst the dead men. And now? Ralph asked. Now that it is all over, what are you doing here? What does a warrior do when the war is over? When the impis are broken and disarmed and the king is dead? Batso shrugged. I am a hunter of wild honey now. He glanced up at the cliff, at where the last smoke wisps were blending into the darkening sky, as the sun touched the tops of the western forest. I was smoking a hive when I saw you coming. Ah, Ralph nodded. It was that smoke that led us to you. Then it was a fortunate smoke, my brother Henshaw. You still call me brother? Ralph marveled gently. When it might have been I who fired the bullets? He did not complete the sentence, but glanced down at Batso's chest. No man can be held to account for what he does in the madness of battle, Batso answered. If I had reached the wagons that day, he shrugged, you might be the one who carried the scars. Batso, Ralph gestured to Harry to ride forward. This is Harry Mello. He is a man who understands the mystery of the earth, who can find the gold and the iron which we seek. Nkosi, I see you. Batso greeted Harry gravely, calling him Lord, and not allowing his deep resentment to show for an instant. His king had died and his nation had been destroyed by the weird passion of the white men for that accursed yellow metal. Batso and I grew up together on the Kimberley diamond fields. I've never had a dearer friend, Ralph explained quickly, and then turned impetuously back to Batso. We have a little food. You will share it with us, Batso? This time, Ralph caught the shift in Batso's gaze, and he insisted, Camp with us here, there is much to talk about. I have my woman and my son with me, Batso answered. They are in the hills. Bring them, Ralph told him. Go quickly before darkness falls, and bring them down into the camp. Batso alerted his men with the dusk call of the francolin, and one of them stepped out of the ambush onto the path. I will hold the white men at the foot of the hills for tonight, Batso told him quietly. Perhaps I can send them away satisfied without trying to find the valley. However, warn the ironsmiths that the kilns must be quenched by dawn tomorrow. There must be no shred of smoke. Batso went on giving his orders, the finished weapons and freshly smelted metal to be hidden and the path swept clear of spoor, the ironsmiths to retreat along the secret path deeper into the hills, the Matabili guards to cover their retreat. I will follow you when the white men have gone. Wait for me at the peak of the blind ape. Nkosi, they saluted him, and slipped away, silent as the night-prowling leopard into the failing light. Batso took the fork in the path, and when he reached the rocky spur on the prow of the hill, there was no need for him to call. Tanasi was waiting for him with the boy carried on her hip, the roll of sleeping mats upon her head, and the leather grain bag slung on her back. It is Henshaw, he told her, and heard the serpentine hiss of her breath. Though he could not see her expression, he knew what it must be. He is the spawn of the white dog who violated the sacred places, He is my friend, Bazo said. You have taken the oath, she reminded him fiercely. How can any white man still be your friend? He was my friend then. Do you remember the vision that came to me before the powers of divination were torn from me by this man's father? Tanasi, Bazo ignored the question. We must go down to him. If he sees my wife and my son are with me, then there will be no suspicions. He will believe that we are indeed hunting the honey of wild bees. Follow me. He turned back down the trail, and she followed him closely, and her voice sank to a whisper, of which he could clearly hear every word. He did not look back at her, but he listened.